Dear little me, oh, the things I wish I could tell you.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Dear Little Me, an advice podcast all about things I wish I could tell my younger self. Today, I am so fortunate to have such an incredible guest, Robin Miller.
Hello.
Before we dive into this week's topic, I want to talk a little bit about our guest, Robin. Robin, what do you do for work? If you could talk a little bit about your profession.
Sure. I am a licensed clinical social worker out in the northern suburbs of Chicago, and I own a practice with a friend of mine, Jory Rizzi, co-owners of a group private practice where we do individual and family counseling with all ages across the spectrum.
So since Robin is very skilled within the line of work that my podcast kind of relates to, I felt like she would be such a perfect person to bring on for Dear Little Me. So a little bit about today's episode. Today's episode is called No One's Looking. So it's all about how the way you're freaking out about how someone, like people are looking at you in a room or freaking out how others are thinking about you is exactly how everyone else feels. So everyone is just so focused on themselves and what others will think of them that no one is actually looking at you. To start off with this episode, our first question. So Robin, what is your take on this idea that everyone's thinking about themselves and no one's actually looking at you?
Sure. Well, one of the things that I think is really important is what developmental stage in life you're in, right? And so if you look at the development of an early to a teen, those are the years that are often full of insecurity and worries about what peer groups think, right? And so one time we see this really come on strong is around the age of junior high, maybe starting in the sixth grade or so, as people are starting to come into their own, they're moving into puberty and through puberty, and they're starting to identify this awareness that at some point they have to launch from home. They have to leave their nest and be in the big world by themselves. And so one of the things that happens during that time developmentally is they start to learn more about who am I as an individual. But before they get the confidence to become an individual, they want to identify with their peers. That's what would feel safe. If I want to be like everybody else, I want to do what other people are doing. I want to find my way. And that doesn't always look like everyone is exactly the same, but there might be a smaller group within your community that you identify with. And that's why you'll see teenagers all in the same shoes and all in the same coat or all with the same hairdo. And that's where sometimes trends can be so strong, because there's a wish to be identified like your peers so that you can have some sort of confidence. And so these are the kids that give their parents a hard time when they're walking in public or feel like everyone's going to notice if their shoe is unbuckled or untied or something like that, because there's this overwhelming sense of, do I fit in and am I, quote, normal, whatever the normal is for the group they identify with, right? And so we see that a lot. And the goal is for separation individuation, which is a developmental stage. The goal is to move away from your family of origin and out into more independence and autonomy. And so you do that by practicing and playing with different ideas about who you are in the world and how you're going to develop. And so that's where your autonomy starts to come from and your self-confidence starts to come from. And, you know, when your body is changing, you're also really insecure because you don't know yourself yet. So this is, you'll see people move through adolescence as they get more comfortable in their skin, so to speak, and more comfortable with their peer group. And that leads into identity. What's my moral convictions? Who am I as a person? What are my political beliefs? How do I identify or not identify religiously? Things that were important in my family of origin, are those important to me as an adult? Can I successfully launch and function in the world independently? And so during all that development, you see a lot of feelings about the spotlight is on me, right? But that can continue throughout our lives, even if you master that developmental milestone.
So you talked about this spotlight. Is there like a certain effect or idea about like what is exactly the spotlight effect?
The spotlight effect, you know, happens when people really feel like others are watching them or noticing them to a much greater degree than they actually are. And it can lead to a person looking as though they're more self-absorbed or insecure, when really it's a fear. It's fear-based, right? It's they're uncomfortable. And so an example of someone who you might think of as confident, who, you know, has gone through separation, individuation, and has created a life for themselves and finished their education or training and gone on to have a career and have successful relationships. As an example, let's say someone is a new parent and they've never been a parent before. Now they've got this infant that they're parenting. All of a sudden, there could be a new sort of arousal of this feeling of insecurity or the spotlight phenomenon, this idea that others are looking at me or judging me or might question my parenting techniques or how I'm handling this or that. Very real feelings that we all can go through at different times in our life. So that, you know, a new parent is just one example.
Yeah, I feel like it's so like hard to like stop that feeling too. Do you have any like advice or what do you think others could do to kind of stop having this mindset of like everyone's looking at me, everyone's like judging me?
Yeah. You know, one thing is to remind yourself, who am I? How do I be my most authentic self? When I'm second guessing myself, what do I know to be true about me? And remind yourself who you are and what you like about yourself. Another way is a trusted accountability partner. So someone that you really know cares for you, cares about your best interests, who you can check in with and say, hey, how did I sound in that meeting? Did I ramble on? Did I seem reasonable? Was I contentious? Like, what did that make sense, what I was sharing? And so an accountability partner is someone who you would trust, who could give you some good, honest feedback and probably put your anxieties to rest, that most of us are okay and doing okay, more alike often than we are different. Another method would be to say to yourself, so what? So what if I did? Or so what if I don't look as in the same outfit as all these other people? I didn't know they were all going to dress that way. Or so what if I spoke for too long in a meeting? What is the real big deal about that? How will people really feel about me? And similar to the accountability coach, asking for feedback from your community so that you know where you stand with people so you don't have to worry as much.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think like, how long do you think it takes to like kind of remove that negative mindset and just be in that, start to not care as much? How long do you think
that be more confident in oneself?
Yeah,
kind of. You know, I think that the truth is that it's part of the human condition that we question ourselves, that we compare ourselves to others. So I don't think it's the removal of ever having that feeling as much as I think it's managing the intensity of the feeling, right? And so as far as removing it, if in fact someone's really struggling and it's paralyzing for them, or it's costing them a lot of mental energy, just worried about what others think, it's certainly work that can be done in a therapeutic setting, talking with a therapist and getting a better sense of oneself and where one comes from and where that messaging comes from that breeds that negative self-talk. But in general, I think that trusting our gut, believing in ourselves, reminding ourselves of our positive qualities, our good qualities, what makes us likable, what makes us appropriate candidates for the job we're in, or confident, you know, competent in our line of work, or strong in our convictions, moral or otherwise, that if we're talking about something, it's an okay thing to be sharing. Like all those ways we can talk to ourselves and remind ourselves that we're decent are the ways that we manage it. So it's not so much that there's a timeline as much as it's the art and the work of liking ourselves and trusting ourselves and knowing that my favorite expression is there are 31 flavors at Baskin Robbins. There is not one flavor. We can decide who we are. We can decide what we like. There's lots of combinations that could be made with 31 flavors, and we're all actually okay. And as long as, you know, we're doing our best and showing up authentically, we're probably just fine. And so I think it's the work of a lifetime, right? To know ourselves and honor who we are.
I really love that ice cream flavor comparison. I think that's really cool because I think as a society, it's so interesting that it's such a common thing for like so many people to care what others think. Why do you think that society has made this such a, this is just what society is?
Well, I think being social creatures, right? There is a wish to identify with other people, to have people mirror developmentally. When we hold a baby in our arms and we look down at them and they're looking up at us like a newborn, you're doing what's called mirroring. You're cooing at the baby and they're looking back at you and cooing back. And that's their first experience of knowing they're present in the world. And developmentally, that gets internalized over time and a baby grows up and then they can separate from mom. But the theory is that what's happening is we're humans who need each other. And so being like other people or being seen in a good light by other people is what helps reflect like a mirror to us that we're okay, that we're part of the group, that we are functioning within the boundaries, you know, social norms, so to speak.
Yeah. So we talked
it's
a lot.
It's kind of a human drive.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about other people's experience. I was wondering if you had like any personal experiences where you've had to overcome caring what others think. And do you think your job has helped you out within your personal experiences?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I definitely think as a young social worker, because I finished school in my early 20s and then went on to become a therapist in a community agency, that it would be uncomfortable at times to sit in the chair of the therapist working with people who may have even been older than me or wiser than me or had children and I didn't yet have children, or had a significant other that they were partnered with when I didn't have that. All these different experiences that I was trying to help people through and work with them on that I had not yet experienced myself could lead me to feel like I was being judged, or what did they think of me, or what did my supervisor think of me, or a colleague that had been more seasoned in the field than I was. And I think over time, what I learned in my line of work was that I had something valuable to offer people. And while I couldn't offer them all the experiences they had been through, I couldn't identify as if I'd been through those experiences, I could use the skills that I had been taught and that I was honing and I was getting supervision on to understand their experiences and start to tolerate my own angst about, can I be what this person needs me to be? And accept that there were ways in which I could, and there were probably things that I couldn't provide for them. And so they could get from me what I could offer. And if it wasn't all that they needed, they could get something from someone else, like therapist. But to give myself credit for what I could bring to the table and honor that. And so that helped me over time, believing that, you know, helped me over time get more comfortable in my work. And so I would say, absolutely, I was confronted with that professionally, and I definitely worked through it. And now it's kind of cool when someone comes in with something that I'm not expertise in or I'm not familiar with, because I'll let them educate me on what they know and see how I can be a helper to them, or I'll go study up and learn something new I didn't know. But I don't greet it with insecurity or worry. I greet it with interest and curiosity. And I think that that's one of the ways that I manage it, is to say, I know I'm smart enough, good enough, capable enough, and I'm also comfortable to say what I don't know.
Have you ever had it for people who have gone through different experiences and then later in life you end up going through those experiences? Has like those sessions with those people influenced your decisions within that? Or is it more of like work and personal life, you've kind of like separated, or has like any of your patients inspired?
That is a great question. My patients, I call them clients, but same thing, but they have definitely inspired me, and I do carry them with me because the relationships are so meaningful. So certainly one of the things that I love most about my job is the exposure I have to learning from others. Things as simple as all the different types of jobs that exist in the world that people tell me about in my office that I never knew of because I've been in a therapist's office, you know, in my bubble. But also life events that people have been through absolutely are things I take with me. I hold my clients really dear. And so their stories are really important to me. And so I certainly think that in my line of work, I've learned a lot about human beings and scenarios and situations people find themselves in and out of. And it definitely has influenced me when I've been confronted with something in my life that I've heard about before.
Awesome. Well, do you have any like last advice you'd want to give on the idea of that no one's looking?
Yes. My advice would be that we all need to be patient with ourselves and gentle with ourselves, and remember that we're good enough. And that means a lot, being good enough. We don't have to be perfect. We don't have to do everything exactly right. When we make a mistake or we're flawed, that's all we're doing is showing that we're human and that we'd all benefit from being kinder and with ourselves and of course with others, but intolerant. And it starts from within.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on this episode of Dear Little Me.
It's my pleasure.
Yay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Signing off.
I want to give another huge thank you to Robin Miller for being able to be on this episode and give us some really great advice and insight on our topic of no one's looking. So this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So thank you so much for BetterHelp for sponsoring this video. So definitely give online therapy a try at betterhelp.com/garden. So that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garden. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/garden today to get 10% off for your first month. Therapy has helped me greatly in my life, and just hearing Robin's insight of her being a social worker and helping others, I feel like this is a great opportunity for anyone seeking help or just seeking to better themselves to check out. Again, thank you all so much for listening and being a fan of my podcast, Dear Little Me, and I can't wait to see you next week. Dear Little Me, oh, the things I wish I could tell you.